Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk, Cosmic Queries Edition. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. And we can't do cosmic queries without Chuck Nice. Chuck, welcome
hey,
back.
Hey, Neil. By the way, you could.
Okay.
You say you can't do it
lying.
Without me.
I'm sorry, I was lying.
You're being kind to me. You're being kind, okay. And I appreciate it. You know, you're like, we couldn't do this without Chuck Nice, but I've actually seen shows where you have.
Okay. Damn, called me. I thought I could slip that one by, but apparently not. Okay. But good to have you, Chuck.
Always
and. You know, and we've got a special guest, a guest we've never had, and I don't know how she went under our radar for so many years. Yeah. We've got Allie Ward with us. Allie, welcome to Star Talk.
I'm here. I'm so happy to incite such excited stammering. Here I am. No one can believe I'm here, least of all me. Hi.
So you've got quite the thing going on. You've taken ownership of all the ologies of the universe. And have delivered them back to us in digestible bites, not only in your Twitter stream, but in a podcast and videos. So this is just, I love it. Well, let me say something here, if I can, just, I don't want to sound like, you know, father time on the porch, on the rocking chair, okay. But you have a background that would not immediately indicate that you do exactly this. But your background is all the background you need to do exactly this, right? So there are students who study acting because they want to be an actor, right? So they go to law school, you're going to be a lawyer, business school, you're going to be a businessman. And you do these things, and now you invented all of this stuff because that is that melange of talent now unique to you, and that can only manifest in products that are the unique paw print of what you bring to it.
That makes me feel a lot better about job security, I'll have to say.
Okay.
I can rest easy. Well,
tell that to your parents who said, where did we go wrong? She's not under there.
But I mean, you know, I think that really, one thing I've learned from Ologies so much is that the people that I interview are so passionate about what they study, whether they're a bufologist studying toads or they're someone who is a fire ecologist or whatever, they tend to really love their jobs. And so I think I've really learned from doing Ologies is figure out what you love the most and then just gravitate toward that.
Passionology.
Yeah.
It's the study of watching people get excited about their work. Yeah. I just invented an ology. Right. So there.
I can actually use that. Now that you've said it, I can use it. So okay, I didn't invent it. You did.
Maybe there's an ology for my passion, buttology. Is there?
You know who I had on? I did do gluteology with Natalia Reagan, who has been on Star Talk a bunch. So she.
Yes, we've been. Yes, she's a friend of Star Talk.
We talked all about butts. We talked all about
butts. The primate butt is a whole thing with the orangutan.
Yep. Yeah. Talked about gluteology. Yeah.
And the mandrill, the big red butted. Wow. Yeah.
Gluteology, that's what it's
gluteology.
Called.
Okay. Yep, gluteology.
So do humans have the biggest butts? Humans have the biggest butts, right?
We do.
Of all the primates.
And I'm going to use first person plural on that. I'm going to include myself on that. We do have the biggest
right.
That's very kind of you.
Yeah. The juiciest
of
That's
very rumps. Inclusive of you.
Yes, right. It
very
is.
Very inclusive.
You're a big fine primate when you back that thing up.
Yeah.
There you go.
And for a reason. So yeah, you can listen to her episode and learn all about it. But that's kind of, I realized I was really good at being curious and just nosy enough to be uncomfortable in some situations. So it turns out.
You need that because that gets you beyond the edge of your comfort zone. Which is always important. Otherwise, nothing new shows up. And what did you study in school?
I studied science. I loved science. And I also loved fine art. And so I was studying illustration and science. And I couldn't decide which way to go. And I thought maybe I would do both. But I ended up as a double major in biology and film.
Well, there it is. And you're the full manifestation of that. That's great.
And then if you notice, there's a very distinct dichotomy in her choices. One actually pays money where you can get a job, and the other one doesn't. So she's like, fine art and science. Which one can I live on? Which one? Biology and television.
I mean, ask a grad student, though. There are grad students listening saying, do you know how much grad students make?
Wait, Allie, let me put Chuck in his place here. I can put Chuck in his place. Your fine art infuses the depth and elegance of everything else you do. So no, you may not be specifically making money from the fine art. Mm-hmm. Everything else you're doing is enhanced by it.
Yeah, I tried to say that. I tried to tell my mother that when I went into comedy. I tried to do the same thing, Neil. Did not work.
Did not work. Okay.
She's like, you need to infuse some money into this rent.
That's good.
There is an ology for that. Gelotology is the study of humor. And I interviewed someone who told me Dr. Burke down in Loma Linda. He studies the effects of laughter on medical patients. And he is a man who is serious about laughter. And it was one of the driest interviews I've ever done, which I thought was absolutely perfect because he's so serious.
So if you say, I was laughing so hard, I was in stitches, that would have extra meaning to
it
him.
It probably would. Right. I think.
Because if I bust out my stitches, I don't want to laugh too hard. You know, if I'm in the hospital trying to recover, I don't want Chuck too near me because I might laugh too hard.
Yes.
You could just say, I was laughing so hard, I was lengthening my telomeres is a better way to say it.
Oh, good.
So
you
live longer when you laugh. Is that the deal?
Yeah.
That's the deal.
Okay.
Yeah, the telomeres are good. Good. Mm-hmm. Chuck, we have questions for Allie. Is that right?
That is right.
We're solicited from our fan base.
This was so much fun. I forgot we were doing a Cosmic Queries.
Cosmic Queries, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you have for us?
Okay, so let's just start off with Adam Crowther or Crowther. It's C-R-O-W and then Thur. So Crowther? I don't know. Anyway. He says, thank you for this opportunity to ask the question.
Chuck, you never know. So, okay, go on.
I wish I could refute that, but I can't.
You can't.
Okay, here we go. Okay. He says, thank you for the opportunity to ask this question. I have friends and family who have been convinced that COVID vaccination is useless against the disease and it will be harmful to our health. They are motivated by the general distrust of conventional medicine and faith in alternative, so-called holistic and spiritualistic healing methods, and their strong belief in the paranormal. Ooh. So he says, how do I approach this discussion, Adam? So you're a person who studies everything.
Each of the fields that you dip your toes in or full body in mm-hmm. require some sensitivity to the vocabulary, the jargon, the what's interesting, what's not. And so you have to think this through. And somewhere in there, you would have come up with methods, tools, and tactics of communicating what needs to get out there. So what can you share with us on this topic?
Well, you know, I was lucky enough to study biology, and I used to read a lot of journals for fun when I was in college. I was a dork. So luckily I have that kind of background. But, you know, things like this, when it comes to communicating science, that I always try to start from is just empathy and understanding where someone's coming from. Whether it is asking a scientist to share their work or whether it's trying to get these ideas to the public. And so I think, of course, there's things that are infuriating about this, but if you are with someone who does not want to understand science or is blocked to it, always come from an empathetic standpoint of what are they scared of. I think typically fear is what blocks us off from a lot of learning. So what are they scared of?
This would come from psychology.
Yes, anology indeed.
See what I did there? Am I good?
Loved it. Haven't done that episode yet. Too broad a topic.
Okay.
But yeah.
But the idea that the empathy at least doesn't have them dig their heels in more strongly, you might be able to find a place to have that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, a space, a conversational space.
Yeah. You don't do any good if you are being condescending to someone or patronizing, or if you are annoyed at them for their beliefs. It doesn't do anyone good. You don't get, it doesn't help anyone.
Well, I'm doing this whole thing wrong because I have the Fred Sanford approach. Shut up, dummy. Shut up.
Yeah, he did say that, didn't he?
Does not open a lot of minds. So try to address what they're scared of and then try to perhaps talk to them about how scary the other alternative is, you know, in terms of vaccination.
So what you're saying is you're an idiot is not a good opener.
I think no. But it's a good closer if they don't listen to you.
We have to get you back on another show the week before Thanksgiving. Before everyone goes home.
Yes.
So that the Thanksgiving dinner conversations can, so no one dies.
Yep.
Right? We'll have the special
show. I have two ologies for you, though. We do have vaccine infodemiology, which premiered in January, has a lot of information, has a lot of talk about vaccine hesitancy and where those come from a historical, psychological place, and agnotology, which is the study of willful ignorance, which is a real study, and I talked to a Stanford professor about that. So those episodes are there in case you want to understand why some people just don't.
Okay, very good. I like the overview there. Very good. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more Q&A with the queen of ologies, Allie Ward on Star Talk.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hi, I'm Chris Cohen from Haworth, New Jersey, and I support Star Talk on Patreon. Please enjoy this episode of Star Talk Radio with your and my favorite personal astrophysicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
We're back, Star Talk, Cosmic Queries Edition. I got Chuck with me, and Chuck, we have a guest. I don't know how we missed her the past 8 years that we've been doing this. Ali Ward, welcome. Welcome to Star Talk. And
I'm here.
How do we find you on Twitter?
At Ali Ward, A-L-I-E-W-A-R-D, or Ologies. Just at Ologies on everything. I sat on those handles. I got them. They're mine. Ologies.
Nice. So you own Ology.
I do. I couldn't believe the handles were available.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I have to think about that.
It's a good thing. Trust me.
If you turn evil... Mm-hmm. Then to control the ologies is you become a superhero nemesis.
That's my plan. Yeah, my plan is to ruin everything. You're just seeing part of my backstory now. So someone's going to wrong me, and then I'm going to use
everything.
This is
your origin story now.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So, Chuck, we have to be nice to her because we're not telling what powers she's advanced.
We might turn her into an evilologist.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Lightning's going to come out of my eyes. I'm going to own the world. It's going to be great.
There you go. So, Chuck, we solicited questions specifically for her in this on her ology universe. So what do you have there?
Okay, here we go. This is Chapter Lifshitz who says, hey, what's up, Stellar Star Talk crew, Neil and Chuck. Chester Lifshitz here with the question about ancient science. Clearly man-made discoveries before language, even though they did not formally fall into today's definition of science, do you think there would have been a limit to the advancement of civilization without language?
Ooh.
Interesting.
I like that.
Is there an ology for that?
So, Ali, have you interviewed any linguists or anybody who's thought about this language in the brain and
I haven't. But I want to say, obviously, I guess it depends on how you define language, because there are so many animals that use language and have different ways of communicating. So are they talking about just written language? Are they talking about like syntax?
Word.
Because there are different primates. There are monkeys and that have different dialects in terms of where they grow up in certain rainforests. So
I'm thinking every species of animal on Earth has no trouble communicating with other members of its species. All right. I mean, you look at ants and bees and birds and they're just doing fine. And I bet cavemen, the cave people, they, without a dictionary and a language and a school, I'm sure they communicated with each other when they were hungry, when they needed more food, when they're sleepy. I mean, maybe we should tune the question a little tighter and ask, maybe basic discoveries could be communicated, but not subtle nuances of discoveries, which would require a more sophisticated way of communication. What do you think of that? That's my answer, and I'm sticking to it.
It's a good answer.
I think we would find those nuances because the same way we found nuances for when you're deaf or when you're blind, we always seem to find a way to communicate with each other as human beings. And even if we didn't have that, we would just find a way to communicate those nuances.
It would be interesting to look at, written language and technology, and if they follow a similar curve, if there's a certain limiting factor. I don't know, but I will say that I want to just deconstruct the question in terms of what is language, because I think that we have a very narrow definition of that in terms of like what is human written language. That's what I say. I say, go back to your question, retinker the language of your question, and then we'll re-answer it.
Can I say? Damn, just send him back to the drawing room.
Hey,
Chester.
Allie. We have to be here next week, okay?
Chester, I think it's a good question, Chester. I do. I just want to deconstruct a little bit.
How about this? Let me leapfrog this and say, science as we now think of it took great leaps and advances only after scientific journals became the common way discoveries were shared, not only within a country, but across national boundaries, speaking whatever was the agreed upon language of the day. Right. And you go back several hundred years, it was Latin, the language of the erudite and the scientific communication. That's when it really took a jump. So I have to say, whether or not it's spoken language, the simple act of communicating a discovery at a distance mattered greatly.
Yeah. And you know what? That's so interesting, because that's where the codification comes in, is the fact that you're able to have these, you know, records so that you can go back and compare and then compare across distances.
You don't have to reinvent something.
You don't have to reinvent something.
You have the record. Right. Not only the record of what's been discovered, but the record of dead ends, so you don't have to repeat the mistakes of people who came before you.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Great job.
All right.
Good question.
All right, keep going.
That was awesome. All right, here we go. Tom says, C-E-Z, so I don't know. He says, I think being nice is better for teaching the scientific method. What are the verified experiments showing which teaching methods are best?
Yeah, so Ali, what's this field? I mean, other than the field of education, is there an ology associated with that?
I think I had Bill Nye on. Pedagogology.
Who's he?
He's this guy. He's
who's that guy?
He's
just started.
He's just starting out in his career.
Okay. And that's right.
We talked about science communication, and he essentially was talking about how you shouldn't introduce a concept with a big word first. You should talk about the concept first and then define it instead of just dropping a big word. Essentially, I think not alienating people is the biggest hurdle to get over with science communication. So I guess I would err on the side of being nice in terms of trying to be as inclusive as possible and have it be a welcoming space. Because I think one thing about science that intimidates people, especially lay people, is they think that scientists are all in lab coats. They know everything. They don't break anything. They don't make any mistakes. They don't fail at anything. They are just imbued with knowledge. They don't realize that scientists
inaccessible to them.
They don't realize that scientists are just really curious people who do a lot of experiments that mess up a lot until they find an answer. So I think trying to come at it from a more humanistic, like, hop on board, learn what you can, instead of like, get out of here.
I like that. I like that, rather than think of it as something up on the ivory tower hill that you have no access to. Very good. All right,
I also think the more varied backgrounds we have in science, the different questions people ask. I think if you have the same people in science, they're going to ask the same kind of questions of their experiments. And I think that's one thing I really love about doing ologies, is having all these different types of scientists who approach their research based on their own background. So yeah, I think hop on in. We need as many scientists as possible. So nice. Nice is better.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, I agree. All right.
All right. Very cool. So thanks for the supercilious answer, Ali. I don't know. English humor.
Okay, loved here we it. Go.
Here we go. Stephen Sommers wants to know this. He says, hey, say you've spoken on TV or a podcast to a huge audience with total confidence in your idea, only to find out later that you got something wrong. How do you set the record straight when that happens?
That's a great question.
One
thing I recommend if people struggle with this is just take what you need from your house and go live in a cave for the rest of your life. Don't show your face again. Remove yourself from society. You failed. It's all over, is what I would say. No, that's not right. I would say...
Chuck, you're right. We do have to be here next week.
I think, you know, I think one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that science is evolving. There are so many things we thought about science, and then we did more experiments and learned something else. And so understanding that science and just knowledge, human knowledge, is always elastic. It's always changing. You may have been wrong. That's great. Admit it. Cop to it. Issue a correction on Twitter and Instagram and on your website and move on with your life. I think...
But Ali, there are two kinds of wrongs. One of them is, this is what we think is true today, but more research may undo it later. Mm-hmm. And so I say, well, 3 years ago, I got that wrong because that's the best we knew at the time. That's different from blunder, where you just simply say something that's just flat out wrong and someone calls you out later on. So that's a more of an embarrassing kind of error. So should that person move to the cave forever?
I would say, remember, every human is a human. Everyone makes mistakes. And, you know, they say there's a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. One is like, too afraid to make mistakes. Other is, make a mistake and I move on from it. So I think the best thing you can do is admit your wrongs, apologize for them sincerely, and put out a correction.
And so we have to work on that mindset. That's a mindset that people fear, I think, because they don't, you know, what is it they said that the scariest thing, even scarier than death, is speaking in public for some people?
Yeah.
I never understood that because I never had an issue with that.
I mean, you think people would rather be at the front of the room at their own funeral than giving the eulogy at somebody else's.
Then in the front of the room of a full house. Right. Okay.
Yeah. And so, I mean, unless there is a sniper or you're going to die straight up of a heart attack at the speaking podium, you'll be fine. I always say that, you know, we're definitely so afraid of things that can't hurt us. I remember I made a flow chart once of like, can this thing kill you? If yes, run. If no, chill out. Those are the basics. I did an episode.
I love that flow chart.
It's a great flow chart. I use it all the time, but I did an episode, two-parter called Fearology with someone named Mary Poffenroth, and she's an expert in fear and the amygdala and how we react to fear. And it was life-changing. She is so great. And she essentially said most of our fears and anxiety and stress is just worry that we're not good enough. And so if you think about everyone walking around worrying that they're not good enough to do their job or follow their dreams or start a conversation or a podcast or correct their mistakes, then, you know, that's a whole lot of stress that we have that we could.
So I got one for you, Chuck.
Yeah.
Ready? What flat earthers fear most is fear itself.
Oh. Yeah.
By the way, that joke made me believe the earth is flat. So
did you just come up with that or did you?
No, I tweeted that a couple of years ago. And no, it was, I think it's been around. It's been around.
The only thing we have to fear is fear
is,
itself.
Is fear.
Actually, I'm going to tell you something. That's pretty damn clever.
Yep.
So
I love it.
That's good.
And it's the fear is what does for the wordplay. I like it. All right.
We got time maybe one more question. What else you got, Chuck?
Yeah, what do you got?
All right. Let's go to Kayla Slaughter. Kayla says...
By the way, these are all Patreon members, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, Neil, because let me just tell people that you can go to patreon.com/StarTalk, support us there if you come in at a certain support level. We take your questions and we read them on the air, and that allows us.
I mean, they bribe us to ask their questions. That's what.
Yeah. Listen. Yeah. Nobody in this organization is a law enforcement official. Okay. There is no law that says we cannot take bribes.
All right, go on. Next question.
Here we go. She says, I'll be starting a family soon. I want to make sure my children have a well-rounded experience in science and politics and all ideologies, basically. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on how I can start early?
I wish that paper encyclopedias were still around, because I feel like when I was a kid, all I wanted was an encyclopedia shelf in our house just to take a volume and then just go sit under a tree with it. But I guess...
So you're 75 years old.
I'm 1 million years old. Yeah, I'm...
that is good. Back when we had paper, books were made of paper.
Right. You can smell them with your nose. We did have an old... We finally got one from a garage sale, but it was so outdated that it was like, one day... human man will be on the moon. And I remember being like,
yes, yeah, I love the out-of-date things. They're fun.
Yeah,
they're fun.
I know.
That's
they're
very
cheap.
Funny.
But I would say let them frolic. Let them frolic. Get them a microscope, because you start swabbing windowsills and start looking at fly mouth parts, you start to realize the world is a lot bigger and smaller than we think. So I'd say let them frolic.
Fly mouth parts. That was very random right there. Of all the things you could have listed, fly mouth parts.
But
I retract the question. I don't want to know how you came up with that in your list.
Have you ever looked at them? What are you doing later today? Get yourself a microscope. Find a dead fly.
Fly mouth parts.
You know? They're just thinking about them barfing on a sandwich and sucking it back up. The world is big and small. It's beautiful. It's great. Get them a, maybe get them a telescope. And a microscope, and then
this should be free range children with access to the large and the small.
Yes.
And in those limits, there are no bounds.
Yes. Nice.
And I want to make it known that I don't have kids, so take this with a grain of salt, because I don't know how to raise children.
I heard in offline that you have a dog.
I do. I have an 8-year-old daughter. She's a poodle. Yeah.
And does your 8-year-old poodle daughter have a microscope?
She does. Yeah, she has a microscope. I bought
Chuck,
her.
She doesn't have opposable thumbs. They're working on that.
She's doing great. She's got infrared goggles. I got her an electron scanning microscope. We just keep it in the garage. So she's got everything she needs.
By the way, Kayla has a follow-up for you, Allie. She says, what's it like talking to so many smart people all of the time? And by the way, I love your shows, plural, she put.
Well, yeah, there it is. Kayla, what it's like talking to smart people all the time is incredibly, incredibly humbling. So it's there's nothing better than being reminded that you're the stupidest person in a conversation. And that's what I do for a living. It's great.
So Allie, that reminds me of a quote. If you're the smartest person in the room, find another room.
Yeah. That's a good saying.
That's what you're saying here, Allie,
that's
right?
What I'm saying.
You're reveling in the fact that every outing you learn something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For so many people, the pain of learning something new is unbearable to them. And so they stay steeped in their ignorance, ossified from the graduation day from when they left school.
That's true. Ooh, living in the past.
God. All right. So with that, is there such a thing as a stupid question?
I really don't think so. I think if it's honest and vulnerable, it's not stupid, and chances are someone else in the room has it. And we're all going to die anyway. We're all going to be bones and dust and a fungus is going to eat
true?
Us. Yes.
That's true.
That's how I live my life. Cut bangs.
Wow, that's very blunt, but true.
We're all going to die. You're going to be powder. No one's going to remember you. I don't even remember my great-grandparents' name. So why would I be like, I don't want to ask this question about solar power or about the universe.
Wow.
No one's going to remember me.
Can I quote you on
me.
That?
Yes.
Okay, someone said, I'm afraid to do this. You're going to die anyway.
You're going to die. Literally
ask
a
the
fungus.
Question. You're going to die anyway.
Your fungus lunch at the end of the day. Ask a question and learn something. If someone laughs, they're a jerk. So it's great. Just do your life.
All right, wait a minute. I got to tell the story real quick. Because it's speaking of stupid questions now, you just reminded me. You're going to die. Okay, I have evidence to refute that. We're somewhere outdoors. It's Neil and I and these people who are huge fans. They come over. They're talking to him. He's being very, very gracious, spending way too much time talking to him. And so the guy says, hey, do you have one of those apps on your phone where you can hold it up to the sky and it will show you constellations? And then Neil goes like this. Are you kidding me right now? And I was like, yeah, bro, he is the app. I'm like, are you insane? You're asking Neil deGrasse Tyson does he need an app on his phone to look at the night sky? I'm like, brother, he is the app. What is your problem?
Yes.
Yeah, my answer is, in my day, we had to remember where the constellations were.
Right. I think, embarrassing moment for him, but still, there's a lot of stars up there. If anyone's taught us that, it's you. So he learned something about you, that your brain has even more capacity than he ever imagined. And also, he learned he needs the app. You don't.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go. Okay.
And this bit about being fungus lunch, I'm trying to decide whether that's a happy note or a sad note.
It is. It's amazingly liberating. I did a whole episode on thanatology, death and dying. One of the happiest episodes I did. I came out of there saying, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. So yeah, your fungus lunch, ask a question, do your thing, follow your passion, read the encyclopedia. It's all fine.
And remember, you're delicious.
To some organism, you're delicious. Guys, we got to take a quick break, but when we come back, more Star Talk with Ali Ward.
Hey, Star Talk fans. This next segment of our episode with Ology's host, Ali Ward, is sponsored by the all-electric Chevrolet Bolt EUV, the everyday electric vehicle for everyday people. That's you. The all-electric Chevy Bolt EUV has so many cool features, including the ability to engage in conversations hands-free with the industry's first hands-free driving assistance technology. You can find out more at Chevrolet.com/electric/Bolt-EUV. All right, let's get back to the show.
We're back, Star Talk, Cosmic Queries. And for this segment, we're going to actually devote this to a discussion about electric cars. Yes. Chuck, what do you think of that?
Yes, that's awesome. Because I know you don't like the word awesome, but in this case, I think it is awe-inspiring.
But just to be clear, I love the word awesome, but when properly applied, like when you discover a new universe or something.
Okay.
When people say, it would be awesome if you could pass the salt, that is not a good use of the word awesome, okay?
Okay, here is a good use of the word awesome, because electric vehicles actually do so much to help the environment. And I care about the environment. I know you do. People don't think I do. But this segment we're doing in partnership with the Chevrolet Bolt EUV. So I'm just over the moon because we get to talk about electric vehicles, man. And that's our future.
All right, so this EUV, is that like SUV except electric? Is that how we're going to
think about it? Yeah, exactly. Okay, doesn't it sound better, though? Doesn't it sound better to be like EUV, you know?
EUV.
So, yeah.
Let's get back to our guest here, Ali Ward from Ologies, who basically did a land grab on all ologies in the universe.
Nice.
all of them.
That's a straight power move.
That's total gangster right there.
Yep,
it's like...
Once you get that handle, you're sitting on it, and it's yours. But yeah, this would be electric vehicle technology, I suppose, the segment
The ology,
right?
Okay.
There you go.
Here's the ology.
You just cram that ology in whether or not it belongs.
Yep, that's what I do. Someone mentioned something in casual conversation, and I tell you what ology it is. But this one is really exciting to me. I've been excited about electric vehicles since I was a kid. My dad is really into alternative sources of power and solar power. And so I have been watching for years and seeing how EVs come on the market. So I'm really excited about the Chevrolet Bolt EUV. I think EUV is a good move.
Okay,
I like the way it sounds.
Cool. And Chuck, but is it like $100,000 like other electric vehicles? Like what's going on there?
That's the great thing about it.
Otherwise, it's not for everybody. You can't take that Chevy to the levee. If it costs that much, no good old boys are doing that. So what's
right? Yeah. Well, that's why they drained
the levy.
That's why they drained the levy, was to pay for your very expensive, which this is not. Actually, when I said it's accessible, that's what I mean. It's this is a car that allows people to enter into this realm, and if you're a conscientious person,
as a first foray. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. So Ali, do you have a question?
I wanted to know.
Wait. Actually, that's not fair because you're our guest and we usually take questions from the audience, from our fan base. But you seem so into it. Maybe we'll give you the occasion to ask the question with the permission of our fan base. I think they'll allow it.
So the floor is mine. I have the cosmic query conch right now and can launch a question.
Do you have it?
Okay, uh-huh. So I wanted to talk about whether or not electric vehicles are good for the environment. How much good do they do over a car that runs on fossil fuels? What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I can, I mean, I don't claim to be the world's expert on that, but I can get you a lot of the way towards an answer to that question. So here's the problem. Transportation today, you know, cars and trucks and things that move commerce, I guess even trains, but some trains are electric. So let's just stick to the ones that have sort of engines that burn fossil fuels. The problem is, if you have a car that takes gasoline, it can only run on gasoline, right? So if you run out of gas, you got to go to a gas station and fill it up with gasoline. So, you know, we all know how much gas costs, and we know where it comes from in the world, and we know if a pipeline gets shut down, and we know if a war breaks out, and if we know if an oil well is on fire, and we know if there's new regulation related to it. So oil has become a strategic commodity simply because we need it to run our transportation grid. So now in comes an electric car. So an electric car, of course, it still uses power. All right. So what's up with that? Why is it good rather than sort of neutral or bad or equal? Right. So here's what happens. You got your car and it's at home and you plug it in. Okay. Now it's getting electricity from your power plant. There's a chance your power plant is using coal. There's a good chance of that. All right. So that's not really much better. All right. Burning gasoline. There's still this carbon footprint. Okay. However, the power plant is not limited to just coal. If they wanted to, and many have, they can put in, if they have sunlight where you are, a solar farm or a wind farm. And if you're near water, you could be hydroelectric. All of these sources of power can be generated by your power company and show up in your wall socket. So you don't need 12 different engines in your car to use 12 different kinds of energy. You just need a plug that gives you access to the thing that's generating the energy 12 different ways. So if you electrify the transportation grid, you are future-proofing our path into a culture and a civilization that can wean itself off its dependence of fossil fuels. And so that's why it works. That's why it's good.
I like that answer. Not to mention, if you go solar on your house, you essentially have a solar powered car, which is a car powered by the sun.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
There's got to be a bumper sticker for that. like solar powered.
Yeah, but that wouldn't work in places like Seattle where the sun never comes out, or upstate New York. But yeah, it would be believable if it's in a place where the sun is prevalent. So that's why electric is good. Now, the problem is I can have a gallon of gas over here and I can move it over there where you need it. Okay? You can't carry electricity with you. Oh, sorry, you can charge a battery and then I can move the battery over there. No, the battery's in the car. Okay? So one of the problems with electricity as it's generated is you can't sort of store it outside of the battery that's in your car. So to run your lights, to run most of the things that civilization uses electricity for, it doesn't come out of a storage battery. It's generated on the fly as you need it from the power station and delivered by the high tension lines.
I was going to say, like, I'm glad you said that, because there's a lot of people who are, you know, electric vehicle hesitant, I will say, because they're worried about how far they can drive, like, because of what you just said. And the cool thing about the industry, but more importantly about the Chevy Bolt EUV because I got to take a tour of the car with GM. The cool thing is, this car has nearly 250-mile range on a full charge.
250.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Right. And then...
That'll get you between any adjacent cities. Yeah. I mean, New York City is 250 between Boston and Washington. Right. And you're in L.A., Allie? What cities with it? San Diego?
If you need to make a getaway, that's Palm Springs, that's Joshua Tree, that's Santa Barbara, That's, yeah, up the coast.
Oh, excuse me, Joshua Tree. Oh, excuse me.
Goodness.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are different hangouts.
Excuse me, I'm about to take my Chevrolet Bolt EUV down to the Joshua Tree.
I mean, I've got an
Perhaps you'd like to meet me there.
Sometimes you need an Instagram shoot, you need to get in your Bolt. I love the EUVs.
Yeah.
I think if you like a hatchback with a little bit higher profile, I love that. And the range is great. They call it range anxiety. People who are afraid to go EV because they think they're going to be stranded. But once you drive an electric, it's kind of like once you become a bird watcher, you start seeing all these charging stations, just like you would see birds you didn't realize were there before. But once you drive an EV, it's like, oh, there's a charger. They're everywhere. You can charge in parking lots at the mall. You can charge next to your grocery store. You can charge at hotels. It's just like, it's really easy.
Wait, so the bird watcher analog there is, if you've never looked for a bird, you would never know it was there until you knew what to look for.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they're everywhere. I got you. Yeah. Okay. So that's just like a psychological effect.
Of, once you know what to look for. But yeah, there's EV charging stations everywhere.
Yeah, there's about 40,000 birds to look for across. When you're traveling,
is that how many EV stations are there? Really?
Yeah. There's about 40,000 public charging stations. So
that's great.
You know, you can.
Okay, so Chuck, which goes faster down the road, a Chevy Bolt or Usain Bolt?
You know, I'm gonna say that the Usain Bolt is faster out of the blocks, but the Chevy Bolt is gonna ultimately smoke them.
Don't tell him that.
You don't need as many carbs for your Chevy Bolt. You don't have to run it on pasta, protein, anything. I think range, better range.
Oh, I gotcha. There you go.
Yeah.
So is that that's your only question you had?
That was my main question about it. I think, you know, people who are considering going from a fossil fuel car to something that is electric, I think tend to be people who are environmentally conscious. And so they really want to know, how much better is this for the environment? But knowing that you can use...
I agree. And those are the people who do it first. Yeah. But ultimately, if you get the right price point, people just do it because it's the right price point.
Not to mention...
Right. Oh, wait. So then, you know, speaking of what you just said, before we actually got on the show today, Allie was doing something on your computer where you were like looking at the savings. So when you talk about price point, there are hidden savings in every electric vehicle. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you have what were you doing?
Well, there are fewer moving parts. Oh, can I back up real quick? We're running out of time. I don't want to take up the whole thing. But Michael Faraday, go back 150, 60 years.
When you said back, I thought you meant back in the show.
No.
Like, can I go back? Michael Faraday.
So Michael Faraday, an English scientist, a physicist, he basically is responsible for figuring out how to generate electricity.
Right.
Okay. And he invented the concept of an electric field, by the way, because that's not a thing you can touch, right? It's just this thing there. So he can draw it and calculate, you can calculate with it. So he realized that if you move a wire through a magnetic field, it induces current in that wire and it'll show up on a meter. And so, well, it was a little novel at the time, but what would you do with this? This is kind of a stupid toy. And then people figure, oh my gosh, this is the birth of the electrification of the world. Point is, the way we do that now is we have a tightly wound, what's called a turbine, a tightly wound wire coil that spins in a magnetic field and an electric a current is induced in that wire. Ever since the beginning of electricity, we've known how to spin things. That's what we do best. We've been doing it for 150 years. And what is a car if not electricity spinning things? So the acceleration on an electric vehicle can be excellent because of this fact. And that's why the Chevy Bolt, I didn't check the acceleration numbers. They might actually accelerate out of the blocks faster than Usain Bolt now that I'm thinking about it.
I was checking on price point stuff just to see how much would I save per year driving an EV. And my parents live about 400 miles away. So I go up a couple times, obviously, like every month or two. And I would save $10,000 over 5 years on gas, just based on that.
Okay.
Which is, if you're calculating how much...
Not to mention how much CO2 that is. Right.
So a little karmically and then pocketbook-wise. But I did. They have a number cruncher for you, so you don't have to You don't have to pull out your spreadsheets. They have it for you. But yeah. And yeah, the acceleration is better.
I see what you did when you say karma. Karma.
You like that?
Yeah, I see what you did.
Electric. Karma. The puns are electric.
So guys, we got to land this plane or park this car. So Ali's been delighted to have you on this show. I can't believe we haven't had you ever on before. We got to do this again with your permission. Yes. And talk about some of the ologies that you've discovered, or I think you're inventing some of those ologies.
Maybe bending some words.
I think you're pulling them out of I don't know where.
Okay. I do look for them in the literature first. I promise. But yes, so all many right. ologies to cover. Right. I'm here whenever you need me.
And so little time. Yes. Okay. Excellent. Thanks for being on Star Talk. And you can catch her on her ology podcast. And it goes everywhere. I mean, every ology you can ever imagine, it's even the ones you haven't imagined because she made them up. They're there.
Loosely.
All right, Chuck, always good to have you, man.
Hey, Neil, before we wrap up, I just want to let the viewer know that if you're ready to make the electric future part of your present and do some good for the environment, which is what it is all about, check out the Chevrolet Bolt EUV at Chevrolet.com/electric. Chevrolet.com/electric. Do some good, people. Come on.
All right. This has been Star Talk. Cosmic Aquarius. Neil deGrasse Tyson here. As always, keep looking up.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.